We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another week of In the Know. What's up, Mason? How you doing?
Pretty good. Just finished up the last day of work before some vacation time. So pretty fired up about that.
You don't sound fired up, man. It's vacation. Get fired up.
Getting out of the good old freezing-ass cold Chicago weather, heading down to Cancun for a few days. So
gonna be
a good time. But clearly some good stuff to look forward to for me. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Started a new job this week. It was my first week. And I say it's gone pretty well. I guess it would officially end tomorrow. But not the job, the week.
And it's like, no. Man, they didn't like – you must have really bombed orientation.
Man, I crushed orientation. But no, it's gone pretty well. It's been a little bit busy. I've been getting my feet under me, getting to do all the fun introductory stuff. It's like your first day of school, and you're figuring out where all the classes are. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's fun. It's been a lot of fun. Want to shift the conversation to something else that is fun. We wrote an article, we being me, you, and Jason. We have an article up on the website in case you guys haven't read. It is called The Beal Deal. Now, followers of this podcast and us on Twitter, you guys already know that we've been clamoring for Bradley Beal for the longest time. We finally took some time to get our thoughts on paper as to what some of the deals for him might look like. So if you haven't checked it out, do check it out. We have three different deal structures. And, you know, we might not have nailed all the specifics if something like this were to happen, but feel like we captured the overall premise pretty well, along with some interesting, you know, cap wrinkles if you're into that stuff, that nerdy stuff.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting how it all came together, too. So full disclosure, some of you guys who follow us on Twitter will know, but like I missed last night's game. I've actually... Shamefully, I've missed both Cleveland Cavaliers games. One was just had other plans with my better half on Saturday night. And I was like, ah, Cavs game should be a fine one to miss. If we lose to them, we got much bigger problems. And you know what? I don't even want to see the reaction on social media if the Pelicans lose that game. And then last night I checked out my first ever NHL game. So that was a lot of fun. But I get home from the game and I got a message from Jason. And clearly, who you and Jason were both credentialed last night. And there was you guys clearly had some conversations about this Bradley Beal thing with this extra wrinkle. And so he messages me and says, all right, we're putting this article up tonight. I was like, all right, it's 11 PM. I'm sitting in bed and kind of want to go to sleep, but let's do this thing. And it was easy because like Schmidt said, we've been talking about this for a while. And, you know, between we have all these different frameworks, like you just said up there with whether it's, you know, no bad contracts, but draft picks, all bad contracts and fewest draft picks possible, or a combination of the two. We hit, like you said, we hit all the fundamentals, but I'll let you talk a little more about the you know, without going into too much detail. You guys can obviously check it out on the site, but very interesting little caveat to these deals based on some news that came out for the Wizards a day or two ago, right?
Yeah, well, it was not even a day or two ago. It was literally Jason and I were at the game. And, you know, we see a text. I think it was a Woj tweet, first of all. And he was like, the Washington Wizards have applied for a disabled player exception for Bradley Beal, the amount of which will run approximately $8.6 million. And, you know, I was like, hey, Jason, look. And he's like, literally the first thing he says is, he's like, is it $8.6 million or is it $8.641 million? And like, that's how specific. It just the first thing, he didn't ask anything else. He's like, is it $8.641? I was like, I don't know. He's like, because one of them is the exact non-taxpayer MLE. And I was like, well, shit, you're right. And immediately another writer, Keith Smith, follows up and says, the amount is equal to the non-taxpayer MLE because this is the maximum that can be granted given, you know, the size of the contracts and where the Wizards are and what the CBA allows for. So it is the exact non-taxpayer MLE. And then, man, you should have seen Jason, like his gears, like his eyes lit up and like you could tell that, like, you know, he was already formulating a plan. He's like, we could maybe use this to our advantage. And I was like, what do you mean? And he kind of broke it down. And here's the gist of it. We're not going to get too in the weeds with CBA, esoteric CBA stuff. You guys can read the article for that. You guys can follow Jason for that. One of the smartest cat people I have ever met or talked to. But the gist of it is, anytime two teams are over the cap, and they want to do a trade with each other, they have to use a trade exception of sorts. And the disabled player exception is not exactly a trade exception because it expires at the end of the year and they're limited to absorbing, you know, one player if they want to absorb it by trade, and he's got to be an expiring. He can't have any like future guaranteed years on his deal effectively. But Jason pointed out that you can structure a trade in which, and again, I don't want to get too specific, but here's the gist. You send out a few pieces for a guy like Bradley Beal, and you know, one of your pieces could be Julius Randle, who makes the MLE, or it could be, you know, someone like Wesley Johnson, who is an expiring, you know, he's around 6 point something million. He fits very nicely into their disabled player exception. And you could structure the trade in a sense to where the Washington Wizards can generate an even larger trade exception. So it gets a little bit complicated with Randle. So I'm just going to stick to the Wesley Johnson example. If you trade Wesley Johnson along with other salary, basically, the Wizards can send you a little fake asset back and absorb Wesley into the disabled player exception, all while completing the rest of the trade, and they can generate a trade exception for the difference of Bradley Beal's salary and the rest of what you're sending out. So if the rest of what you're sending out is Etuan Moore and Julius Randle, you know, that adds up to a little, you know, No, it's not Etuan Moore and Julius Randle. I'm getting my numbers wrong here, but essentially, I'm so I don't, you know, mess up my words. Essentially, they can generate a trade exception for close to $10 million or $11 million, which is a lot bigger than the 8.61. You know, they have from the disabled player exception, and it doesn't expire for a whole year, and that's a nice little trade asset because, again, that's something they can hold on to for a year. They can use it for future trades. They can use it for future signings. It's not something that's going to swing a deal here or there, but it can be a nice little, like, you know, it's like the cherry on top of a sundae. It's not the sundae, but it's something, you know. It's like the nuts on a sundae.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the general point. It's like any little thing helps, especially when you're talking about a deal of this magnitude that would really mean so much for the roster. A guy like Bradley Beal, any little thing you can add on that makes it just a little bit more likely to get something like that done, you should try to do that. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, it's not a pipe dream, but it's not that far off from a pipe dream. I mean, this is a guy that I'm sure a bunch of teams are going to be going after. And Pelicans probably are assuming that the Pelicans are one of those teams. And it just depends on, you know, what they're willing to move to get a guy like him. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I apologize, you know, if I lost some of you guys in the weeds with some of that stuff. The gist of it is, the Pelicans can make life for the Wizards a lot easier by giving them this larger trade exception if they structure the trade correctly. And that's something that could be the difference between, you know, two equal offers from two different teams. And then the Pelicans are like, wait a minute, we can do this just because we have a guy like Wesley Johnson. It's not limited to only the Pelicans. You know, other teams with similar contracts can do the same thing. But, you know, if there is a team that doesn't have a contract that meets the requirement, like Wesley Johnson, then the Pelicans definitely have the advantage there.
Yeah. So, all good stuff. So, you know, thinking about moving from that conversation you guys had about Beal, let's talk hoops. Tell me, what did I, from watching hockey instead of basketball last night, did I miss anything? Anything groundbreaking? Did you learn anything new about this team, whether it's because Nico came back and now we finally have a fully healthy team? Was there anything that either one of these, I watched the Grizzlies game, but either one of these Cavaliers games showed you about the Pelicans that really inform, you know, how this team might play once the competition gets stiffer, because it's about to get stiffer?
Oh gosh, I don't think that you can take much from these games going forward. But, you know, there are a couple things that maybe you can hang your hat on. I don't think the two Cleveland games were similar. I think that this one, you know, with Nico Meritich back, it adds another dimension. And then Etuan still didn't play. So we're missing another guy who's going to get some minutes here or there. And I'm not sure whose minutes he ends up taking. I would love for it to be Tim Frazier's minutes. I would love for Tim Frazier not to get a single minute, but I'm not sure if that will happen. But here's a couple things. The first thing, with Nico being back, you just notice how well the floor is spaced. You just notice how easily the ball moves and how much room the players have to cut and dive and just move, for lack of a better word. It took some time for them to kind of figure it out. It looked like, you know, they had so much space they didn't know what to do with it. They were having some dumb turnovers, and Drew and Alfred took turns getting blocked at the rim on what should have been easy layups. But, you know, once they figured it out, they went on this crazy run to close out the second half, and then they didn't really look back from there. So Nico just adds another dimension to this team, and it's something that I've written about extensively both this season and last season. When I first advocated for Nico, before we even had him on the team, I was like, if you can put AD in space, you can surround him with a guy that can space the floor, you're just going to unlock a different layer to this team. And that's exactly what Nico does. And, you know, he only played 22 minutes last night, and he put up a really efficient 17 points. I'm not so concerned about his shooting percentages because he's still going to be rusty. He's going to have his ups and downs, especially as he's trying to find his legs in this upcoming road trip. But it's more of the process, and the process is like he's very decisive with what he does. He cuts in the right places. If he has the ball, it's either shoot or move it. He doesn't, you know, sit there and think about what he wants to do with it. He just does it. And I think that just that unpredictability, that decisiveness makes it really hard for a defense to defend.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of gets lost then, especially given how garbage the Pelicans defense has been in aggregate this year, is the fact that there are a lot, and this was true last year too down the stretch, the Pelicans can defend with him on the floor. And they do. I mean, AD Nico lineups are cleaning the glass. They're 61st percentile in defensive rating. So, I mean, they're slightly above average. Obviously, you know, if you put Nico on the floor with Randle, you're going to have a bunch of problems. But this team can be a good defensive team with all of its guys healthy, and that includes someone like Nico. And it's from all the bad we've seen of this Pelicans team defensively so far this year. I don't think it's an impossible notion, and you and I have discussed this on prior podcasts, that this team can really bounce back defensively as well because we've seen the offense clicks, right?
Yeah, I mean, they scored 140 points last night, which is just obscene. And if they really wanted to, they probably could have broken 150 if they, you know, they were running the score up. I mean, this team is supremely talented offensively. They just need to figure it out on defense. I think what you mentioned kind of brings me to the second point, which is I don't think we saw a single minute last night where one of Nico or Julius were the centers on the floor. So they staggered it with, you know, Julius and Nico got most of their minutes with AD, but Ja still got his minutes. And when he was on the floor, they rotated. I think Nico probably got the most minutes with Ja, just the way the rotations work out, but they rotated Julius. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think AD got some minutes with Ja as well. And that's great. They're not going small. Those small lineups haven't worked in the past. Ja's been playing really well. I think they should continue to do that also just to save the legs of their big man and to take the pressure off of them. You could steal minutes from AD. You know, you can keep him to that 35, 36 minute range instead of the 39, 40, 41 that he's known to get into. So that was great. I liked it. Nico, again, you know, defensively, he's just a smart player. He knows the right spots. He doesn't do dumb things. And really the only thing that holds him back is his athleticism, which, again, in a team defensive concept or construct, he's totally fine in.
Right. Yep. Very nice. And it's so nice to have him back, to have Alfred back. I mean, I was just looking at, and I think a lot of us have been doing it, trying to balance the concept of Alfred Payton with actual Alfred Payton, because all of the numbers that we've seen so far say, holy crap, this team jumps up five levels with Payton simply back on the floor. But you know, that the numbers don't really mesh with the eye test in the sense that Alfred Payton is not an all-star. I mean, he's a guy, and he's a good point guard. He's probably better than
a lot of people. He started last half like 0 for 5. That's what he started off with. He bricked so many easy layups last night and had you know, his first half, he was really bad. He was getting lit up by Matthew Dellavedova. Matthew Dellavedova was just lighting him up, and Alfred looked lost on defense for a good part last night. So you're right. He's not an all-star, and we need to temper those expectations. But go on. You had a point you were making.
Yeah, it's just – I wanted to get your thoughts on how, like, what's the level of sustainability here with how good this team plays with Payton on the floor? I mean, I tweeted out today that their stats with Alfred, Drew, and AD on the floor together is it's only 400 possessions, which is, it's not nothing, but it's not a super reliable sample yet. But they're playing at like the 100th percentile on offense They're not turning the ball over at all, which I don't think is a coincidence. I think that that makes more sense when you have suddenly you're not relying on Drew to do as much of the creation. You have another complimentary ball handler who's a better basketball player than Tim Frazier. And then, but even the defense is picked up. And I think that may be more of a small sample size thing, but the defense is 94th percentile. And so to what degree is that sustainable? Obviously they're not going to be 100th percentile net rating with it for the rest of the year, but you know, what do you think about how this team is playing with all these guys healthy and how does it project forward in your eyes?
It's really tough for me to predict because, you know, from an eye test standpoint, like me watching those games, it really doesn't look like they're doing anything special that would make it unsustainable. You know, it doesn't look like they're hitting crazy shots or they're doing running crazy plays that the teams are going to figure out. None of that looks to be the case. But from an analytical standpoint, when Peyton's on the floor, they're shooting like 40% from three, which I don't know if that's sustainable. Like, I feel like that number is going to tank. It's over 40%. I don't know if that's sustainable. So that worries me. I think the three-point shooting is probably going to falter off soon. I do think that their paint efficiency and efficiency around the rim is going to continue to be that way. I don't think they're going to totally drop off on offense, but it's hard for me to predict. I don't feel comfortable saying that Peyton's back, everything is fixed.
Yeah.
I don't, and like this recent run, you know, we've played three really bad teams. Well, two bad teams over three games where Memphis is just in a tailspin. I think they've lost 11 out of 12. They have players fighting each other. They're making trades. Like, they don't know what the hell is going on that team. So it's... We had a hot start, and then we got Peyton back, and we've played a bunch of cupcake teams, and those are really boosting the metrics. This next road trip, though, is going to be really difficult. And I think before we get into that, let's take a little break to do a little read for our sponsors. I don't know if you guys have heard, but WGN America has a new show called Pure. Coming out, it's going to come out next week. You've heard plenty of stories about drug cartels. They're all over the news, but the crime ring that you've probably never heard of is one of the most dangerous in the world. They're the Mennonites. The Mennonite mob, you heard that right. 99% of them are kind, God-fearing people, but there's one group that has smuggled millions of dollars of narcotics from Mexico to Canada. Wednesdays, starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central, WGN America presents the new TV series Pure, based on the true events of the Mennonite mob. The show is about Noah Funk, the newly elected Mennonite pastor who is determined to rid his community of the drug cartel, but he finds himself in way over his head. The good pastor, along with his wife, will do some very bad things all in the name of protecting their family. Think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness meets Narcos. So get hooked on Pure Wednesday starting January 23rd, 10, 9 Central, only on WGN America. WGN America is available on DirecTV, channel 307, Dish, channel 239, or check your local cable listings for the channel in your area. So shout out to WGN, shout out to Pure. You guys,
you had me at Breaking Bad, man.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty intense. It does seem like a similar concept, right? Where the guy's going to do whatever for his family.
Yeah. I don't know.
I made it to like one season of Breaking Bad, and I was like, I cannot watch this show because it's too dark for me.
Man, what I've told people about that show is, get through the first season, and then it's one of my, it's maybe top three on television. The first season's slow and it drags and it is kind of dark, but it just, I almost stopped, but I didn't. And it was incredible. I truly loved it, but yeah, anyway, so, back to the Pels, it's been,
this road trip.
It's been nice the last couple of games, but things are about to get a little shaky potentially. This is the five, what is it? So we've got five games coming up on the road, six of their next seven. And the first one is probably the most winnable. And then the nice thing is that until the OKC game on the 24th, which is seven games away, so there's no back-to-backs.
What are our upcoming games? Who are we playing?
Yeah. So we've got Saturday is at Minnesota. Then a couple days later, we go to the LA for the Clippers. Then a couple days later, at Golden State on ESPN, where apparently Boogie is not playing, and we'll play the next game after that as his return. But we'll probably leave that when I see it. and then Friday at Portland. So all these games are spaced out by no back-to-backs yet. And then 2 days off before Memphis on Monday the 21st. Then home for one game against Detroit. And then a back-to-back in Oklahoma City. So, and then you've got San Antonio, Houston, Denver, San Antonio, Indiana. It is the easiest way to put that.
And that takes when's Indiana? February 4th? Yeah. That takes you right up until the deadline.
Yep. And then at Chicago, which is Wednesday, February 6th, I'll be at that one. And that'll be right around the trade deadline. That'll be their last game, I think, before the trade deadline. So, is the most polite phrase I can use for that stretch.
I'm serious. I think it can be but is it?
Yeah. Relative to the rest of the season, yes. Because I think the one thing to take a step back, the Pelicans' schedule from here on out is about roughly as difficult as the schedule has been up to this point. So it's not like in aggregate we're going to like this massive awful schedule and we've gotten through the easiest part already. That's not it. It's just playing in the West. It's going to be about the same moving forward. So, but that said, so there are some obvious not even trap games, but Golden State is obviously Golden State. And McNamara, which I kind of agree with him. If Boogie does come back and play in this game, it makes it probably more winnable for the Pelicans because integrating Boogie into a team midseason, we saw how that went in New Orleans a couple of years ago. We didn't make the playoffs. We thought, we're close enough to the playoffs. We'll get there with Boogie and AD in the middle, and that didn't work out because it was such a massive change, and it's going to be tough. Now, Golden State's going to play Golden State style, but trying to integrate Boogie into that is not going to be an easy task. Besides that, you've got a bunch of games against good teams. Nothing against a truly – there's no other truly scary games in my mind apart from Golden State. Maybe at Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back. That's tough. Oklahoma City's got a pretty good defense. They played a cupcake schedule to date, so they're not as good as their record, but they are still pretty good. And other than that,
Rockets on the road are probably going to be are hard.
Yeah. So I was looking at the next seven, which is mostly on the road, but they're playing a bunch of teams that are at about their scoring margin.
They're playing these are games that they can win if they play the way they are able to play. I mean, outside of Warriors, you kind of write off as a schedule loss, especially on the road. You're not too concerned about that, but there's nothing that should scare you about the Clippers other than the fact that they're very good. They have a lot of good players, but we've beat them once already. People can stay healthy. I mean, it's the Clippers. They have adequate rest in between that. As long as LA nightlife doesn't get to them. Mm-hmm. All right. They don't scare me. They can win this game, especially if they're playing with the urgency and the appropriate fear that Gentry wants them to have. And likewise with Portland, again, it's a tough game on the road, but we wiped the floor with them in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. We've won there before. Portland isn't beating the brakes off teams right now. Mm-hmm. And they got off to a hot start, but they've been pretty mediocre since that hot start. Memphis, we just played Memphis again. You're hoping that they don't figure things out and they continue their tailspin to a great lottery pick for them. Or no, it'd be for the Celtics. whatever, Memphis. And then Detroit, again, just a mediocre East team. You're going to play at home. What? So over these next, let's see, 5 games, what are you, or 6 games. That's a 5, let's just stick with the roads. The 5-game road trip, Minnesota, Clippers, Warriors, Blazers, Grizzlies. What are you predicting the record to be over that 5-game stretch?
So, we can strike.
No hedging. Two. What are you predicting it to be now?
2-3.
2-3?
Yeah.
Okay. What are your two?
Memphis and
Minnesota.
So Memphis is one of them for sure. And then, I mean, I'm assigning probabilities to 3 of those other games. I'm having Golden State as a loss, Memphis as a win, and calling it like 50%, 25%, or not quite like that, but just that's kind of how I'm breaking it down. It's like I could see them winning 3. I'm predicting 2-3. I could see them winning 4, but that's not a likely scenario.
Whatever, so I'm predicting 4-1.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the one they drop is the Clippers. No, I'm joking. but 4-1. I'm a going record on saying that. 4-1.
Okay. What's your is your basis on that? Just full health, or is there something else?
Yeah, full health, momentum, urgency, all the above. Okay. Catching teams at the right time. The above.
That's a fair point, because I mean if you look at how the Pelicans opponents, how they'll fare. I mean, the Clippers were hot, and their record's still good, but their scoring margin. I mean, if you look at these teams the Pelicans are playing, this whole group, these next 5 games, the Pelicans have a higher net rating than all of these teams except for Golden State. They are above the Clippers. They are above Portland. They are definitely above Memphis. They're above Minnesota. They're behind Golden State, obviously. Like these are all the Pelicans can argue that even with the injuries they've had to date, they've played in aggregate as a better team. Obviously, they've lost a bunch of close games, so their record is crap. They're actually, according to Cleaning Glass, they're the second worst team in terms of the difference between their expected wins and their actual wins at 4.4. The Utah Jazz is the only team worse at 4.6. So, and you'd assume with the healthy rotation, suddenly closing games probably gets a little bit easier. The opponents can't just triple team AD, even though they still might, but now you've got other options to help bail you out than just Drew or Randall in some cases. And so there's a lot of evidence to support your optimism, but I'm still, this team's let us down before in situations like this. So I got to see it to believe it.
No, I mean, I agree. Like this team is, consistently fumbled the ball on the road this season. Consistently.
Yep.
And then a lot of that's just not being able to execute on the road, and they don't have defense to fall back on. They just don't. What I'm hoping is going to happen is with Alfred back, with Nico back, they're just going to continue their scoring pace and you know, be able to build from that. Defense, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The nice thing is there's no altitude games in this trip. So you look at a place like Utah. I mean, it's obviously Denver, but even a place like Utah, I mean, you can have that sort of get to you, and especially during a long road trip. But I don't think that's a concern for the teams that they'll be playing. So that's one. And again, with full depth and playing the rotations that I wrote about like 2 months ago when I thought the team was about to get healthy. Maybe things start to turn around on the defensive end. And by turn around, obviously, I don't mean, top 10, but I mean average. And if you have an average defense and a top 3 offense, you're a damn good team. So we'll see what happens.
So here's a question. If they are 500 by the deadline, are you panicking? Are you relieved? Are you optimistic? What are your thoughts? This is not including any moves, just the strictly record, and you're like, all right, we're at 500, it's the deadline.
Optimistic, without a doubt. I mean, this schedule has the Pelicans next 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games up until the deadline. There are three that are what I would call maybe easy-ish wins. One is at Chicago, one is at home against Detroit, and one is at Memphis, maybe? I'd say either at Memphis or at Minnesota. One of those two it should be a gimme. Apart from that, there are no easy games. I mean, this team has to come and bring it every night. And so if you're talking about gaining a couple games in the standings, because they're 2 under .500 right now. So,
the 13 game stretch, you know, you're finishing. What are you finishing with then?
You're saying 8-5 or 7-6?
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah. So, after that, the schedule is. Easy games.
Here's the thing is like you could go into the deadline with a streak. I think you can do it. You can go into the deadline with a 4-game streak. Home game against the Nuggets, who have been awful defensively for last month and a half. Some interesting chatter around them. Their defense has, you know, everyone praised it. They got better. I thought it got better. I thought the Pelicans should mimic what they're doing, but turns out the Nuggets, their shot profile, like what they're allowing, you know, their opponents to shoot in terms of their shot selection is actually bottom, I think it's like bottom 8, bottom 6-ish in the league, and the defense has finally caught up with that. Since like I saw a stat that said since November 27th, so it's a month and a half ago. Since November 27th, they've given up 111 points per 100 possessions. That's worse than their defensive mark last year for the season. So Nuggets here at home, feel like we can take that. Spurs on the road, that's going to be hard. Spurs on the road's always a tough game, but and they're really hot right now. I think they've been one of the better defenses over the last month. They're a top 5 offense. They're going to be a tough team. But again, I think we match up well with them, especially when we're healthy. The only time we really played them was when AD was dinged up, right? Have we played them twice?
San Antonio?
Yeah.
Yeah, we beat them at home and lost them in San Antonio when AD was dinged up, I believe.
Yeah. So I think we can steal a win from we put up 140 on the Spurs.
Yeah. I mean they put up 120. It was the exact same score as last night, right? Oh no, almost. 126-140 was the Spurs game.
Yeah, and then we put up 95 on the road against them, which if this team is healthy, I don't see us scoring 95 points anytime soon over four quarters. So the Spurs are going to be your toughest out there. Indiana, again, not an easy team, but it's a home game. The Pelicans have been good at home. They've got to continue to build momentum. And then, you know, you have Chicago away. They head into the deadline with a 4-game streak, you know, make their trade or whatever. They're looking to come out of the deadline playing Minnesota, Memphis and Orlando. That's about as easy as a stretch you might get this season. Two of them being home games.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they got OKC and then it's All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean their march is their final dozen games, if they're in the mix, that's the time to make a move. I mean, you've got they'll have Phoenix twice down the stretch, or you know, Orlando again, Atlanta at home, Sacramento for everything you can say about them, and they've definitely been a better team this year, and they've beaten the Pelicans once already. I'm certainly not.
I see the Suns on our schedule twice. I see Atlanta on there at least one more time. We're still going to play the Mavs, which I don't think the Mavs are a good team. I mean, there's still a lot of bad teams left to play.
Yep. Yeah. So
I don't think the season's over.
I think the point is this: the stretch, it's big, and they can't just kind of roll over and die. Like if they just bottom out here and
you know, yeah, I would
every single coin flip game and except for you know the couple that they should win, then we've got a problem. Even with the schedule getting easier from there on out, they got a problem. So
yeah,
they can't drop all these 50-50 games and they've got to stay afloat. They've got to stick around 500 and I think things can work out.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm predicting 4-1, but if we went 2-3, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
Because you're getting out of this road mess and then just making a push from there. So 2-3 is what I'm hoping for. Or not hoping for. 2-3 is what I'm okay with. 4-1 is what I'm predicting.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, they've got a – I think it's important that they win 3 out of their next 7. If we bring in home against Detroit and at Oklahoma City, I mean, if they go 2-5 over the next 7 games, you got to start slamming the panic button a little more than you maybe right now. But I mean, the overall point here is they've got to come at it every night. They can't just write off any games as a schedule loss. Even Golden State, I think. I mean, there's no back to back, so there's really no reason to just take the foot off the pedal and. They've got to fight. I mean, they won a crazy, unexpected game at Golden State down the stretch last year. I'm not sure if the seeding was locked up or not yet, but they played all their guys, and Pelicans came out and won the game and convinced. Kind of, I mean, everything clicked. So that can very well happen again. I think they've got to play every game like that.
It ain't over, folks. But
this podcast is.
See y'all next week.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.